Hey, I'm Bob Runkle, and for as long as I can remember, I've loved pop culture. Despite the challenges I've faced in my life, pop culture has always been there for me. I love talking to people and being a platform for others to share their thoughts, stories. Because if there's one thing I never get tired of, it's seeing driven, talented, and inspiring individuals follow their dreams, no matter what obstacles are in their way. And I know a thing or two about that. Welcome to the DJ Bob Show. I'm DJ Bob. Roll it. From Fraggles to Magic School Bus to Orca Whales, Jocelyn Stevenson and I cover it all. From co-creating Fraggle Rock to working on the new Fraggle Rock to writing on the Magic School Bus to working on the reboot of Magic School Bus and beyond, we cover it all. We also talk about my fiancé's love of Orca Whales, and that provides a long tangent, and we may have had the longest elevator pitch on our show ever, but a welcome one. This is a great chat with just a wonderful human being, a real conversation, and I'm so excited to share it with you. Enjoy. For those that don't know you, could you kind of introduce yourself and give a little bit of an elevator pitch of who you are and what you've done in your career?
I'm Jocelyn Stevenson, and I think it all actually started. What I've done in my career is I've focused on kids programming, and I've had a ton of luck, and I've worked with some amazing people, and it started when I was at university, when I realized I went to Stanford, and it was all during the time when there was a lot of stuff about alternative education was going on, Summerhill and all that kind of thing. And John Holt was writing, a lot of people writing about how you could educate kids maybe a little bit better than the public education was doing. And I was really interested in all that. And I was walking around along campus one day, and on the campus at Stanford one day, and it was like a big voice out of the sky came and said, if you want to change the world, you start with kids. And so it was okay. And actually that it shifted me completely. I had been thinking of maybe going to be a doctor. And then I went into psychology. I went into child psychology, blah, blah. And that was it. That was like the defining thing for me. I've been interested in children's education, children's media ever since then. Because what happened was stop me if I get too confusing and I go all over the place. But I started a daycare center in Menlo Park after I graduated from Stanford. And one day, and it was a great little daycare center, and we all the teachers mucked in and everybody did everything. And one day I was there at the end of the day, sort of sweeping up, and there were a few kids left, and we were waiting for their parents to come, and we watched Sesame Street, which in those days was really quite new. And I tell you, I stopped sweeping immediately and just watched the television. I'd never seen it. I was amazed by the reaction the kids were getting. I thought, oh, they are doing for millions of kids what we're trying to do for 30 here. Get me to New York. And so eventually I did get to New York. But that, again, as I keep saying, I've always said this to my own kids. If you have this one sort of North Star, it was like my North Star. It was really, and I think that's lucky too, to have that sort of help you. It's like an organizing principle for what happens next. Anyway, got to New York, went to the children's television workshop. They sort of said, you know, I handed them my CV, which they sort of said, yeah, whatever. It went right into the circular file. I had a cousin who knew somebody in the workshop. She knew the publisher and the person who was publishing the Sesame Street magazine. And I went to see this person. I got an appointment with her, thanks to my cousin. I went in, because I was, you know, maybe not, it might not be what you know, it's who you know. So there I sat in the reception, 23 years old, absolutely, you know, sort of dressed. I was, you know, pin perfect, and I was just nervous, and people walked in and then they walked out and they went out to lunch and then they came back from lunch. And then after a while, it became apparent that the person I was supposed to see had forgotten completely that I was supposed to see her. So that was a little bit disappointing, except for this little Machiavellian. That's when I discovered that I had this little Machiavellian part, which said, she owes you. So I went back to my cousin. It's horrible, isn't it? Anyway, but again, as I say, North Star, I really wanted to get in there. I went back to my cousin. She asked me how the appointment went. I said it didn't because this woman had forgotten. And the next thing I knew, I was having lunch with her. And to make up for it, it really was nice of her. She took me out to lunch and then said, listen to me talk about my, you know, dreams and what I really liked about the Children's Television Workshop and where how interesting it was, where kids' TV was going at that time. And she said, well, I have a job, but you're way overqualified. And I said, I will empty your waste paper baskets if it means I can get into the Children's Television Workshop. So I got hired as a secretary. And then it was, as I said, it was sort of taking every opportunity that came up so I was the secretary for her. I learned a lot about publishing. And then the big sort of break came, if you will, on the day that I was in those days we had mechanicals. You know, this isn't computers, and nothing's weren't beautifully online or anything. I had these big mechanicals. We had these big mechanicals that we were to take. Well, it was actually the managing editor's job to take these mechanicals over to the Henson office. Because Jim Henson, at that time, he personally looked at every drawing of a Muppet.
Wow.
Yep. This, when you think about quality control, when people think about his success, came with a great deal of integrity, authenticity, quality control, all that kind of thing, right? So yeah, he would check it. And blue line, because we would go with obviously tracing paper, blue line every drawing of a Muppet. And so this one day, but that was the managing director's job, and she was a beautiful woman, and you know, wore beautiful clothes. And this one day, it was pissing with rain. It was New York, and to get from where we were on the west side over to where the Henson offices were on the east side was a couple bus rides. And she just said, "I just can't be bothered to go out in it." You know, her hair was perfect, and I said, "I'll go." It was what, the 70s, and I'm wearing bell bottoms. By the time I got across, I protected, obviously we wrapped up the mechanicals. I protected those with my life. But I got across town, the rain, water had wicked up to my knees and my jeans. And I went into the Henson office and I was shown, you know, the big door. I just remember these big wooden doors, beautiful. And they opened up and there was Jim Henson. And I was like this drowned rat. He was so lovely to me. And really, we became friends from then on. He was an incredible creative mentor. I always appreciated that was before the Muppet Show. So that was a really interesting time to be involved in the company, to watch how it, you know, how it expanded, and also just to watch a leader like he was, and some just a visionary. And when we went to create Fraggle Rock, when he realized he had the success of the Muppet Show behind him and was known in 120 countries and all this kind of thing, and it was suggested to him that he could create, because Sesame Street was not easy to co-produce, that he could create an international children's show that would be made for co-production. In other words, you'd have a bit at the beginning that would be local to wherever you were. So it was Doc and Sprocket, or in Britain here, it was the Lighthouse Keeper and Sprocket. It was always Sprocket. It was always there. It was a baker and Sprocket in France. And then the whole the Muppet bit in the Fraggle bit or the Muppet bit, which no little broadcaster around, you know, in a local broadcaster around the world could produce, because with, you know, because it was expensive. So that bit would just be dubbed. So you'd have what looked like a really beautiful, expensive show, and it was local to them. It was genius, this idea. And for the first bunch of time when Jim was talking about it, it was referred to as the International Children's Show. And that's when he thought it, well, we've all heard this, you know, he is famous, you know, he sort of thought, wow, and a show that every kid in the world could see. He turns to us, I want you guys to create something, a program, a series for kids that'll help stop war. I remember Jerry Jewell said, you want that by Thursday, Jim.
And when you hear that, it's like your head turning, like, what? Like, what?
Yeah, but now it's like, oh, who says stuff like that now? Right? Too often we hear, we need to create a show that has five little characters and we can sell the toys and we can da-da-da, whatever, right? Who says I want to do a show that's going to help stop? Well, I mean, I know some people do. There are people out there making wonderful stuff. But in those days, oh my God, it was so exciting. So because I was always about kids' television, I was always, you know, the Muppet Show, yeah, interesting, but it wasn't my thing. I was always just interested in what they were doing for kids. So I was put on this team to create the show. There were five of us, Jim and Jerry Jewell and Michael Frith and me and Duncan Kenworthy. And we holed up in Hampstead, in Jim's house in Hampstead. And he at the time was doing The Dark Crystal, and which was seriously different from what we were doing. I remember him coming back after a day on The Dark Crystal set, which was, you know, serious and wow. And we would tell him that, you know, we just realized that, you know, Fraggle's main thing was to decide what to have for lunch. You know, and then I actually can still see him collapsing to the floor because he was laughing so hard. He needed to laugh. And it was, you know, we just had so much fun. And when we were also given something you're never given now, we had a couple years of development. It was extraordinary. I don't know if I can add to, does that answer your question? Way answer.
That was perfect.
Yeah, sorry. An elevator pitch. But I think the thing I wanted to say most is that people have always said to me, don't you want to do grown-up tell? Don't you want to? No. I've always found kids the most interesting audience. And really fun to write for, really fun to think about, really, you know, the Magic School Bus was another program I did, which I did too. I loved it. We developed a whole way of writing for that show, because the story had to come out of the science. So if we were using three-act structure, which we did, it meant that you couldn't just say, well, this is, you know, well, this is an act. There had to be active, so that the Magic School Bus kids would get involved in a story, and there would be conflict, and there would be risk and all that kind of thing. So, and then the sort of learn at the end would be the science. And I have to tell you, it was really hard to do, but when we did it, when we got it right, it was great. And the success of it and the fact that you know, then Netflix redid it too a few years ago, the success of it was satisfying.
It's one of my comfort shows still.
And tell me, you always learn something, right?
Yes. Can't tell you how many times I watched just the Gets Lost in Space episode alone, the pilot, because it's such a good way. When you're starting a show, sometimes it's hard to establish the world and like what's gonna happen, But you know exactly what's happening with Miss Frizzle. You know exactly what's happening with the king. You see conflict. It's so good.
Thank you. Well, we worked hard to make it, you know, to make that work. It was, and I found it, I loved working on that. And I learned so much. And God bless Lily Tomlin and then Kate McKinnon later. Because, I mean, Lily Tomlin was just, she was great. She was into it. It makes such a difference when the people you're working with are, as you know, supporting what you're doing.
So was there an episode that you were tasked to write that was like, how are we going to write about this?
Uh-huh. Yes. And it's been hugely influential for me too. There was a, I got the episode on the water cycle. Okay? And I thought, well, the water cycle just is, you know, it's an is. That was our rule. You can't just have an is. It has to be. And then I read this article. There was a whole episode. There was a whole issue of National Geographic devoted to water. This was years ago, obviously. And the one thing I learned from that was water never stops moving. It never occurred to me before. But then obviously the Magic School Bus kids get stuck in the water cycle. So that was the risk. That was the tension. And it was, yeah, it was really satisfying to solve that one or to, you know, be able to come up with an idea based on the science.
Yeah. That show has a lot of my favorite moments in children's television because it's kids covering science, but also social emotional growth within the stories too. It was so well crafted and so well done. Like having Arnold be the worrywart and having him get through everything by the end, it's just great. And like Carlos telling the terrible joke.
I mean, these things were planted in the books because it was all.
Yeah, I know, but to.
But then, you know, we went with it, right? So it was, and we had, it was an incredibly great team of writers. So, and we worked really well together. And again, we had science advisors who understood. I mean, the original show was funded by the National Science Foundation. So there had to be, you know, provable outcomes and all that kind of thing, right? And I remember at one point, I'm pretty sure this, at one point, we were on PBS, but at one point it got picked up by Fox Kids at that time. And so it was really satisfying that we were on an educational, a quote unquote, educational station broadcaster, as well as a commercial broadcaster. That was like result, meaning just like you say, the stories were compelling and yeah, not only that, but so people that are watching it for the entertainment are, you know, it's subversive because you learn. I'd love stories from parents of my kid, you know, my 3-year-old just told me about friction. Oh, I love stories like that.
Yeah. So now that I've got you here, who came up with the producer segment? I always thought those were fun wraparounds.
They were, and I can't remember who did. It was a group effort, I think. They were really fun. Yeah. And it was also a way, because we also needed a way of doing a little bit of fact checking if we had to, if we felt like maybe a scientist might get upset because we were a little bit, you know, we were just a little bit loose with the truth sometimes, or you know what? Come on, it's a story. It's a school bus that flies and shrinks. Hello, but but you know, every now and then we felt, ooh, you know, it might be a little close to this. So it was a good way to be able to go through that and say, and sort of make it clear what was scientifically true. And then they were funny. But then, of course, we had to make them little stories. You know, it had to, that little segment couldn't just be dry fact checking. It had to be funny with, then if that was where Liz came in, the little lizard that was Miss Frizzle's familiar, if you will. And she was always doing something funny during those things.
You had so many guest stars too on that show?
Yeah, we did have quite a few. And Lily brought in, she brought in Dolly Parton. I love that.
The holiday special. Yeah.
Yes.
Perfect entertainment. Like, just the arc of that. And when you get people, when I talk to creatives in the children's media space, they say when you get to do something a little weightier, something with a little more emotional weight, you take it and grab it. And that's exactly what that episode was.
Yeah, you do. Absolutely. Yeah, but then you also, you know, there was one writer in particular on the Magic School Bus, John May. He's hilarious. And he was always, I would always ask him, and that's the other thing, the writers, we all worked on each other's scripts. And I would always ask him to polish mine because he could always make them funnier. I was never as funny as he was.
So, do you have a favorite Carlos pun?
No, I can't even remember them now. I hate.
I can't even. I was trying to think of one for me, but it's been so long since I watched it all straight through. But it is such a vivid memory within my childhood and ultimately my adult life, because I still watch it on the regular.
Oh, thank you. I love that.
And it's one of those things that informed me to do what I do now. I mean, there was a whole episode about computers and...
Oh, yeah. And
the fact that having a physical disability, having all these limitations, not being able to play outside, not being able to do this or that, I taught myself how to use the computer and adapt to the physical attributes of using that, and now I do stuff like this.
Yeah, well, that's great.
I love it.
Did it really? Was the Magic School Bus really instrumental in your thinking?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. All it takes is for one person like you to say that, and it's like, my work here is finished. Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much that means.
I mean, because I know that when you're creating this stuff, you're in a vacuum, and you don't really get to hear the impact that it has, because your audience is kids, so some of them will say, oh, I like the show, but when you get to hear from us years and years later how it directly impacted us, it must, like, not that it had a purpose before, but it gives you more of a, like, this is why I do what I do kind of thing.
But let me tell you a really, really, really wonderful example of that. And that's when we were rebooting it for Netflix. So it was the same team. We were, you know, and we were, you know, doing, rebooting Fraggle Rock. I mean, not Fraggle Rock, rebooting the Magic School Bus for Netflix. And so, and just like the way we didn't know we would have for every show, you would have science experts that would consult. You know, if you were going to do a space show, you'd get somebody from NASA. If you go, you know, there would be these scientists, the amazing scientists. You could get them, but now there's this thing called entertainment exchange, and which is part of the National Science Academy. I think they have a database of scientists who will work with media people, because the science, they want the science to be right. Okay, so now it's so much easier. Now we discovered this when we were doing it for Netflix, that you can just ring them up. We had a person we rang up. We said, okay, we've got a show on plant communication, on space, on blah, whatever. We'd list the shows that we were working on, and we'd get assigned these amazing scientists. And I gotta tell you, Bob, actually almost 9 times out of 10, these people would say to us, of course I'll work on this. It's because of the Magic School Bus that I'm a scientist. And that was, we would whoop in the room when we were told that. That was, yeah, there you go. Those were the moments when these guys and we can win these people watched it when they were kids, and now they're scientists.
And kind of going back to, you know, how I kind of reached out to you, one of my dear friends is Noel McNeil, and he wrote for Magic School Bus a little bit too, right?
Yeah, he did back in the day. I have not seen Noel for years. It's so nice to feel through you to be back in touch with him in a sort of nice way. Yeah, he did. That's right. He did.
Yeah, he wrote the Stars episode.
Oh, yeah.
And one other one. But that's the one that I remember. It's so crazy how the children's entertainment circle is so small, so everybody knows each other.
It is. It's, yeah, I just had a meeting with somebody the other day. I mean, he's a producer for Grown Up Stuff, but he does a lot of stuff with puppets, and he knew all these people that I know. Very small group. And the Henson family is a family. In a funny sort of way, you know, those of us who've ever worked with Henson, it's like, Noel, I'll always feel connected to Noel.
So when we started this conversation,
yes. Are you trying to get us back on track? What a good idea.
So when we started this conversation, you're already asking me questions. So
you're okay. So you're 15 years old when you start this.
Yep.
Okay. So, you obviously had the idea for doing this first, right?
Yep.
So what did it just come to you in the middle of the night before you reached out to Noel?
Literally the middle of the night. I
best ideas, aren't they?
I, for some reason, I guess it was the day before 4th of July, and I drank too much Mountain Dew, and I was over-caffeinated. And I just, because I had been working for radio stations before, and they fired me because I was too young, and I was kind of, not a rebel, but I was just kind of like, I didn't know what I was doing, so I would get myself into trouble, not on purpose. So I said, no station's going to hire me. Let me create my own show that I can kind of syndicate to other radio stations. So started out as a 5 days a week, 4 hour a day live show where I took...
Wow, are you going to school at the same time?
This was... that iteration of it was in the summer. So I could do more. But then I realized that's physically taxing for anyone. I can physically do that on my own. So I then started to interview anybody I could get, like punk rock bands, anybody that was just willing to talk to me. And then one day, 2 years into the run, I thought about my childhood and how another show, Bear in the Big Blue House, was so impactful to me as a kid. Yeah. Like the whole talking to camera, you know, that whole thing. And I said, let me reach out to Noel. Cut to, I'm 17. It's my first time meeting him. I look at him like he's this God.
Oh, I love that.
And I'm like, Mr. Noel, I'm so, like, I would never talk to him like this now, but like, I'm like, sort of fanboying.
But he wasn't in the costume though, was he?
No.
Yeah, he just, that's a really disconcerting experience.
And he's just sitting there on the phone giving me the time of day. And I'm just like, wow.
Can I bring you a drink? Yes. Oh, that's so wonderful. I love that.
But then I kept doing podcast stuff and other radio stations. But I couldn't commit. To the weekly schedule because of like all the physical demands of getting a show out or what have you. So Noel was the one who came to me and said, obviously you can't commit to a weekly schedule. You have to do a podcast and you have to release it when you want and how you want. So Noel was really, he kind of ushered in the way we do things now. It's his fault.
Good for him. That's brilliant. And good for you for giving him the credit.
I'm all about collaborating. And if I can like credit people where their credit is due, then, you know, everybody deserves that.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I don't understand when people don't like to collaborate. As we used to say on Fraggle Rocket, we're all in the service of the best idea.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter if it comes from somebody in the props department, somebody, you know, who does sound, another writer. People would come in with ideas because they knew they could, and it was great because it just makes everything better.
For sure. And even if it's, for lack of a better term, even if it's not the best idea or the final idea, but they were heard and they were valued.
Oh yeah, it might not be the final idea, like you say, but it would be, then we'd build on it. And you know, the way Fraggle Rock, it was never the final, obviously it wasn't the final. It took forever, lots of building. And it was, I've often said this too, it felt more like we were discovering things rather than creating anything. If you know,
you were discovering it with the characters.
Yeah, we were really discovering. Yeah.
That show means a lot to me too, because I saw it in reruns when it was on television. But one of the things that stuck with me more now than when I was a kid was the idea of diversity and inclusion and acceptance. Because having cerebral palsy, seeing people that are different accept and love each other and value each other and communicate with each other, that always struck a chord with me. And so what does diversity and inclusion mean to you and mean to all of you, either on the reboot or the original show within the Fraggles world?
Well, it wasn't like we said we have to be diverse and inclusive. It came naturally with the world that we'd created. Because if you're going to create the world you want to see, it's going to be diverse and inclusive, isn't it? So, and it was really fun because, you know, you also want characters that are just different and have, and are themselves. And you don't want necessarily human clones, if you know what I mean. So there have to be things about these characters that only a Gorg could do, or only a Fraggle could do, or only a Doozer could do. Just as there's things about every single human being that only that human being can do. But I love that you saw it, because, you know, sometimes, do you feel sometimes that you get whacked over the head with it, that, you know, that there's been an edict from above that a show has to be diverse?
Especially now. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm loving that you're saying that this you just saw it, but I can tell you it was just natural. Because
prepping for this, I binged watched Back to the Rock because it had been a while, and there were some moments where I got teary eyed.
Oh.
Because when I was a kid, none of this would have happened. I mean, there were small steps, like there was a brilliant character, a human cast member on Sesame Street, a little girl in a wheelchair in the 90s that was very influential to me. I'm now honored to call her my friend, and we're working together on a project.
That's great.
Which is super cool. But few and far between. And but seeing these different creatures just accept each other and love each other and just, you know, coexist was beautiful to me.
Yeah, well, we were all trying to help stop war.
I don't think that was on any of the posters for the series, but you definitely did a.
Well, what was so much fun about Back to the Rock? First of all, for the first season, they asked me to be in the, writer's room for 3 weeks and to write one of the first scripts. So that was really fun. But the writers,
you wrote the moon one.
Yeah,
I love that one.
Yes, and they the Moki one. It was a Moki story, and it was really great to be asked. And it was because the showrunners now are Matt Fussfeld and Alec Cuthbertson, who come from Grown Up Television, and they're hilarious. And it was really interesting to be in a writer's room that was an American writer's room, because I have never really been in a writer's room that's been run like an American writer's room, because I'm here in the UK. The problem with being here in the UK and working in LA is that I could only be in the writer's room from 6 o'clock at night to 9 o'clock at night. And as you may remember, when you suggested we talk at 7:30 at night my time, no, I can't do it.
I worked with you. I was like, well, we'll do this instead.
You did, and I so appreciate it, because that anyway. So that was the first, and it was really interesting because they called me the essence checker, because I was the only person who'd been from in the writer's room from the original series, and it was great because they did a brilliant job, and they just get Fraggle Rock. And then the second season, which we did in 2022, they asked me that this was I was so honored they asked me to be in the room for 20 weeks and to write one script. But what it meant was being in the room for 20 weeks meant that I worked on every single script, because when I was in, I left after 3 weeks, and then a lot of the scripts were done and I hadn't had anything to do with them. But in the second series, I was able to work on all the scripts, which was so much fun.
And I hope there's more of an announcement soon as to when
we see it. Yeah, I know. I'm really looking forward to it. But what was so amazing about this new series was that it, and I just so wish Jerry and Jim could see it, was just because it's turned into something we never possibly would have imagined where it would have gone, but it's totally Fraggle Rock. And I just found that amazing and a huge tribute to the new writers and to Matt and Alex too.
Johnny
Tartaglia, God, let's talk about a force of nature. Oh my God. Do you know him, too?
No, I've always wanted to meet him.
You need to meet him. You'll love him. It's because of him that we even got this series and did this series. And he was a brilliant gobo and a real force behind it. And really, couldn't have done it without Johnny.
I'll be honest. Like, my fiance is not interested in children's television, or wasn't really before, I watched this as a kid, it was great. But I decided to show her Fraggle Rock, and she's obsessed with it.
Oh, I love that. Excellent. Did she see old episodes too, or just the new series?
I mean, I'm sure I've given her a mix of both.
Both, yeah. Well, see, the fact that you can do that, I mean, they look different because of the technology is amazing now. But it's still the same essence, isn't it?
Yeah, and her whole mission is saving orca whales. She's a big advocate for that population. And just having the environment be such a big part of Fraggle Rock, too, it really struck a chord with her.
This is off topic. Do you mind?
Go ahead.
I went with friends and family to the Galapagos this summer, a dream trip, which finally came. We were supposed to go in 2020. It didn't, obviously that didn't happen. And we were out snorkeling. It was an amazing trip with this beautiful naturalist who guided us around. It was like 9 days on this boat. And we were snorkeling and suddenly called back to the dinghy. And we was, well, what's going on? And the guy who was driving the dinghy had spotted a pod of orca whales. And we went out to it. They swam around the boat. There was a mom and a baby. So I'm just sending this, I'm sending the shivers on my head and the excitement of seeing this. I'm sending this to your fiance right now.
She would love that.
Oh, it was so exciting. So I had to say that. So I know that's off, but you can cut if you have to. So
no, again, but having her get introduced to puppetry and, yeah, you know, this kind of stuff in this way, it's really important to me.
Well, tell me too, who you want, Noel knows everybody too. If there's anybody I can introduce you to that you might want to interview.
Well, I will. You could be my new booking agent.
I'll connect you up. I'm not going to book anybody. Come on. You did that beautifully yourself.
Well, okay. Yeah. So one of the things that I really wanted to pick your brain on, mm-hmm, is disability inclusion within children's media.
Yeah.
What strides have you seen and how can we do better? Now, if you have any questions in regard to what I've seen, let's have a conversation.
I think you're much better placed to comment on that. Because to be honest, for the last bunch of years, I haven't been involved in kids' TV so much. I mean, Mind Candy. I worked at Mind Candy, which is a company that had a big, huge online game for kids here called Moshi Monsters. And we did a film. And then after that, I started, except for Fraggle Rock, I don't think, I can't remember when we did the Magic School Bus was in there too, but except for sort of rebooting shows I'd done before, I haven't been am I making any sense? So
let me reword. How do you see disability inclusion playing a part in children's media, whether you, when you were in the throes of it or now, you're just doing new stuff?
I think it's like what we were saying before. It should just be natural. It shouldn't be a separate thing. It should just be what is there. And it's another character, another person with who, and I think that's, to be fair, I think that's how a lot of people approach it. A lot of people, writers and creators. The thing is, we often feel if we ourselves aren't disabled, that who are we to, you know, we do need help. We need people like you to help us with how that character is portrayed and how it would work. Because you know what it is. I mean, it's like, you used to bug me. Sometimes it still bugs me when men write for women. You know, it's, come on,
yeah, right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so that, you know, I appreciate that's not the same thing. But am I making any sense? And I don't, and I hope I'm not being offensive in any way.
No.
I just feel we don't know what the experience is.
You need the unique voices.
Yeah, we need the experience. So,
like, there's something that I kind of, this is me on my soapbox. There's something that I kind of strongly dislike, and just television in general, children's television, grown-up television, any of that, is casting non-disabled actors,
yeah,
in disabled roles.
Yeah.
I hate it. Yeah. When I was a teenager, there was a show called Glee, and I loved it. And there was a kid, there was a student in a wheelchair, and I was so grateful that there was someone like me on screen. And then I found out that he wasn't disabled. I was crushed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, okay, but why wouldn't you take the effort to to try to find someone. Yeah, sure, he needed to sing, but I'm sure there are talented singers who are in wheelchairs.
Yeah,
to look harder.
Yeah, no, you have to look. Yeah. I believe that when we were casting Mikey, who was Carlos's little brother, you might know better than I do. Mikey was in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And we you know, the voice actor we had was also in a wheelchair. I mean, it was like, that was how sort of strongly we felt about that. I mean, it's just, you feel strongly about that as you're not going to cast a white actor to play a black part. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Or somebody who's not, you know, the casting always bugs me when somebody's playing a gay character.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like you say, how hard is it? It's not.
And yeah, it really isn't.
I think we're definitely on the same page here. But that's my personal concern is always, I don't have the experience, so I would want to work hand in hand with you if we were going to do a you character in something. That's great. Now I know you. Giving me for this, my big project that I'm working on now, which is books. It's two books, but Bob, you've given me a really good idea. That is so cool. You're going to be in the second book of this series I'm writing.
And we're planting a seed right now.
I mean, you will have to, you're too old. You yourself can't be in it. But you young. So you can advise me on that. Oh, I'm so excited. I can't believe it. Thank you.
So on that note, because you're learning and we're just, what I love about this is that we're just talking,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So is there anything, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but is there anything you would like to know about my disability or just living with a disability in general? Is there anything that you'd like to, that I could shed some light on today?
Because I'm a mom, I want to know about your parents.
My mom is really my biggest advocate. And to the point where when my mom met Noel for the first time in person, he started calling her DJ Mom. And it stuck.
Yeah, it should. Excellent.
But literally, like, it's interesting now because, you know, you're watching your son grow up with a disability and seeing what I've created and what I've done is just mind blowing for her.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. And it must make her heart sing every day when she looks at you.
Yeah. And even when I text her, like I'm interviewing this person or that person, she goes, how did you, what?
Yeah. And do you have any brothers or sisters?
I have two older sisters. I'm the baby in the family. We, and even they're like, how do you get these people?
And what do you find? How are you finding it to move around the world physically? Do you think it's better now than, has it improved, or what do you think?
Yeah, well, my house is a different story. We're kind of getting that remodeled and fixed up. But here's the thing. The Americans with Disabilities Act was passed in 1990.
Yeah.
And a lot has changed since then. So it needs to be updated.
Yeah.
And wider doorways, all this stuff.
Yeah.
We're still not where we need to be.
Right.
But I mean, I talk a lot about disability, but I'm not a disability advocate.
I understand.
Because I want to do this podcast where I talk about the things that I love, but I just so happen to have a disability. It's not like a pity party approach. It's not like a poor me. I remember when I was in high school starting this show, and I was 15, you know, I just went into my freshman year, and teachers would say to me, who set this up for you? who did this for you? What organization? They thought it was like a Make-A-Wish thing, and it's like, I did this.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not their fault. They don't know.
No, no. And they weren't being unkind. They were curious, I guess, or just, and no, more ignorance, isn't it?
But it's also like, what a 15-year-old can create something substantial, but just like,
yeah,
with substance.
Impressive.
Yes.
And wait, yeah, another one more question, personal. How did you meet your fiance?
We met through her ex.
Okay.
He was talking to her, and he basically said to me, you know, you got to meet my girlfriend. And I was like, okay. And then basically he started, I guess, treating her badly. And I just said to her, as your friend, you got to get out.
Yeah, right.
Like, not like fishing for anything, but like.
No, I understand. Yeah.
Being like, this isn't good for you. You got to go. So then one thing led to another, and we're long distance. She's in California. I'm in New York.
Oh, it's hard. How do you do that? How often do you see her then?
We've never met in person yet.
Oh, and when are you getting married?
2026. Well, here's the thing. I don't know if you know this, but we legally cannot get married.
Why?
Because if we do, the state, the government, will cut our disability benefits in half. Because then, once we're married, they'll see us as a unit rather than two separate people.
Oh, for God's sake, Bob. Honestly, I find right now there's just so much outrage. I try to just go, no, light out there. Put the light out.
No, light. But that's how I feel. Like, we should be able to do what we want to do. And if we find love, and if that's the thing, I don't get it either.
No. Well, I've already feel connected to her through orcas. So.
Oh, she got a huge Facebook following with like over 2,100 people. Just, she posts pictures of orcas that she finds, and she's really advocating for these beings. The pod of orcas that she's interested is in the southern regions, like right. California, and there's like 72 of them left.
What? Oh, dear.
And she advocates for them every day, and like really has a deep connection to them. They're like her other family. It's a really interesting journey.
Does she have an organization that one can contribute to?
It's just really a Facebook presence right now.
I'm not on Facebook, never have been.
But I'll send you some stuff. And
okay, be great.
But it's a world that I wasn't privy to, or that I didn't know much about. But I've been learning a lot.
Oh, you're in it, yeah. Well, that whole comment about her and orcas might have gone completely, you know, I might not have even really noticed it. I would have noticed it, but you know what I mean? I had such a bit, but it's because we saw them and we were swimming. There they were around the boat. And the naturalist we were with loves them so much that she actually got into the water with her camera. And the guy who was running the boat went, bye-bye, Patty, thinking she'd never see her again. but she filmed the mother and the baby, and oh, I mean, just she was so excited. That was part of how excited. But there were seven of them, all swimming around.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really so that. Yeah, I'm feeling, as I said, I've got the shivers on the top of my head. That's my connection with your fiance right now. I can feel it going out there.
So being that we've made this connection and that we are friends now.
Yeah, definitely. So happy to meet you.
So what do you hope when you were, one of the things I always say is when I talk to a creative and the next time they're in a project where a disabled character comes into play, I don't intend for them to change their script or do anything different. But if I could change their focus for at least 1 second based on what I said, then I've done my job.
Mm-hmm.
So going forward, what has this conversation taught you?
Well, you've confirmed for me what I've always felt about including a disabled character. And you've given me a resource because I know you, which is really nice. The idea I can work with somebody I know, because I now have a character that I want to create. I'm going to talk to you. I'll tell you about it at another time, about him. It's also taught me that you just never know where your friends are going to come from. I mean, you sent me an email out of the blue. Yes, we had the connection of Noel. You know, I looked at your website, but you know, yeah, you just don't know what's going to happen and how it's going to shape what comes next. What do you think about that as an answer?
That's beautiful. That's honestly what I intend to do, because I just wanna. My goal for this show is not to be a fan of this, but to also give creatives and similar folk the space to talk about their creative endeavor so candidly.
Oh, it's been fun. You could hardly get me to shut up. But it's also your creative endeavors that I'm so interested in, and where we have this Venn diagram and we're going to have the, you know, the overlapping bit. I'm really excited to explore that, Bob.
So my final question, because I always ask the hard-hitting questions.
Okay.
What character from the Magic School Bus would translate well as a Fraggle?
Well, you know, Arnold has a lot of shares a lot of DNA with Boober.
Oh, 100%.
And I don't know, Ralphie's kind of like Wembley a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say Dorothy Ann and...
There we go.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So, that's fun.
I've never done an original character in my life. Look at them. They're all the same. No, they're different in how they express those characteristics. Yeah, that was fun. I've never done that. I've never thought about that. Thank you for that question.
I'm glad I could be the vessel to where that comes into your head. I love it. Well, this has been fun.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you so much for asking me to do this.
You got it.
Thanks for hanging out with us at the DJ Bob Show. If you liked this episode, drop us a line at djbobrunkel@gmail.com. That's djbobrunkel@gmail.com. Let us know what you liked most about this episode and what other guests we should have on the DJ Bob Show. Thanks so much again for hanging out with us. This is Nate Beagle, your humble announcer.